I have a confession. I love to get something for nothing. I like to find golf balls more than play golf. I like to find a dollar bill in the parking lot. I like to buy things I don't need if I can get them on sale. I just want to get something for nothing. Could it be that this innocent attraction is hiding a much more devious root issue in my heart and yours? Stay with me today as we explore the real meaning behind the Eighth Commandment.
Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Chip serves as our Bible teacher on this daily international discipleship program. I'm Dave Drewy. And for most of us, stealing isn't a big issue. So if you're like me, you kind of dismiss the Eighth Commandment. Well, I've got news for you. We all have reason to listen up today as Chip reveals the truth behind the commandment, Thou Shalt Not Steal. It's a message you may want to hear again. Now, you'll find it along with all the previous messages in our current series at livingontheedge.org. Well, now here's Chip with today's talk from Exodus chapter 20, verse 15.
When you've been to a 12-step program, I mean, it is a very, very interesting experience. Because what they understand is they start the meetings like this. If I was going to a 12-step program, in fact, I wrote mine out, is I would be sitting in a small group of people, and you don't say, hi, what's your name? Hi, what's your name? I would say, hello, my name is Chip. I'm a spiritual kleptomaniac. I admit that I'm powerless to stop my compulsive desires that I have to take other people's stuff. Left to myself, I'm driven in almost every circumstance in life to get something for nothing. I have this burning desire in small little ways to try and get something for nothing. It's called kleptomania. My name is Chip. Now, that's what I would say if I were introducing myself in a 12-step program. Now, others might introduce themselves and say, hello, my name is June, and I'm an alcoholic. Or my name is Bob, and I've had a sexual addiction. And the reason they do that is because the number one issue in change is admitting you have a need. The number one issue in any change is admitting you have a problem. And the human mind and the human heart can come up with almost unlimited creative ways to not only go into denial, but to rationalize and to blame and figure out how not to face the real issues in our life. And so I read what I would introduce myself as, and sometimes my kleptomania has been in very harmless ways. I taught this once at our church, and people were kind of laughing and thought, this is obviously just an introduction to a message. And I said, when I play golf, a great golf game for me is like two or three, maybe four pars out of the 18 and finding 10 or 12 or 15 golf balls. I think there's something in me, and I'm an old baseball player, so if you swing really hard, you can slice most of them. I just aim for the left fairway and hope that as it slices across, it stays into the right. And what I know is there's many people who play exactly like this. I think subconsciously I do that because when I slice out of bounds, I sometimes come back with both pockets filled with golf balls. I've gotten so happy finding golf balls at times that I've waved to my friends and said, go on ahead, I'll meet you at the next hole. You know, give me a double bogey, give me a triple bogey. I've got seven in my pockets and I know there's got to be more out here. It's like Easter egg hunting for adults. And then, so, you know, they thought I was kidding, and so I have this airline bag that I got. I'll tell you later how I got it if I remember. But it was one of those places where, you know, to listen for a presentation for, you know, an hour and a half. It was, a free lunch issue, getting something for nothing. I was either going to win a car, $25,000 in cash, or exclusive luggage. I got all four pieces of the exclusive luggage inside a piece of plastic about that thin, and it unfolds. And the only good thing I could find is I put all the golf balls I found. And so I held up this big bag of golf balls, and the people laughed, and they thought I was kidding, so I went behind the podium, and I had a box that's about this big, and I could hardly lift it, and it was full of golf balls. And they thought, this guy really does have a problem. But then I said, no, I am a kleptomaniac. Then I had another bag, and we had two missionaries in town, and I find good golf balls. I mean, I just have a gift for finding not just balls, but good balls. And I had another big bag that I gave to a missionary from New Zealand and the Philippines because they're so expensive there. And it turned into a ministry. Giving golf balls to missionaries. See, you can rationalize it. It just takes a little time. But you can steal stuff and you can think about getting something for nothing. Now, that's a humorous kleptomania. And now, you know, everyone who plays golf doesn't have this problem, but I do. That's why if we came to a 12-step program, I would share these deep issues in my life. One that wasn't so humorous that happened as I was actually studying the Ten Commandments for the first time at an in-depth level. And I took every time the Greek or Hebrew word for stealing pops up, any place that happened, Old or New Testament, I did a survey, and for weeks and weeks I studied it. Because I thought that basically stealing was like for armed robbers, you know, diamond, you know, people who, you know, steal jewelry out of penthouses, embezzlers, fraud. I just thought it was, you know, muggers down in Central Park. I thought stealing was for people who bought people over the head or people who cooked the books. You know what I mean? Those are people that have kleptomania. But I thought, you know, these commands are tough to take. I thought when I got to number 8, I would skate free, but I was wrong. As I was studying this passage, I learned that the meaning of the word steal is much broader. In fact, some of the uses are in Genesis 30, it's to take from another, to snatch away, where Jacob is ripped off by Laban. Or it can mean to take advantage of someone unjustly. All throughout the Old Testament, stealing means to rob the poor or the widow or the orphan. You can steal by unlawful laws or by unjust decisions that exploit them. Stealing isn't just grabbing or taking. It's cheating, bribing, extorting, or even grafting. It means at times that where you don't take something, you can steal by withholding what is due to another in Proverbs 3 and Malachi 3. It's when you don't pay people the fair wage that they deserve. It's when you owe someone something and you have it and you don't deliver it. It's stealing. It literally can be you can steal by bereaving another. It's used literally of a bear who's robbed or bereaved of her cubs. It's also used of Absalom, and he didn't steal money, he stole people's hearts. He stole the heart of the people from his father. Stealing can involve not just tangible but intangible things like loyalty and affection and stuff that belongs to others. And finally, stealing can mean defrauding, trickery. You can never actually take something, but you can actually deceive another's heart or mind to get unfair advantage, and you steal. And behind all the stealing is, you want to get something for nothing. That's the heart of it. You want to get something for nothing. And so I was studying this, and I'm praying, and sometimes, you don't know how it works, but my system is I get up real early in the morning and I study for a few hours, and then every Wednesday I take all day and study. And then my goal was by Thursday afternoon, my outline is done, I give it to my assistant by 2:00, she comes up with all the notes, then I can sort of cook on it, take Friday off, don't have to think about it, my mind is free, get up early for a couple, 3 hours, look over those notes, decide on the final illustrations, really feel good, spend the day with my family, go into Saturday night church a couple, 3 hours early, and then get my heart ready, pray through the message, and go through it in my mind. Well, that system works really well unless you get stuck on like Wednesday. And I'm studying, and I'm stuck. I mean, I've got all these verses, all these books, all these commentaries, all these notes, and it won't come together. Because there's a process where God births a message in a teacher or a pastor. And it's like there's a stillbirth. I can't get it out. And so when this happens, at times I begin to get anxious, and I'll wake up at 1:11, and then I'll wake up at 2:17, and then I'll wake up at 3:15, and then you get thinking, I'm not going to sleep much. So if you're not going to sleep, you might as well pray. So I got up, got my briefcase open, and I start going over it and over it, and I'm just stuck. And then I said, Lord, it's Wednesday. Do you understand it's Wednesday, Lord? I mean, I know you made the days, and by the way, tomorrow at 2:00, I got to turn this outline in, and I don't want to put junk. All scripture is important, but I got a feeling like doing these commands is like really important. You put them in stone. I'd like to at least get them like on paper, you know, pretty good. And I can't get through. And so I remember saying, Lord, if there's anything in my life or my heart that is keeping me from hearing your voice on this message, would you show me? I mean, I'll just deal with it. Now, I've been up at 1:11. I've been up at 2:17. We're on round 3. So it's not that I'm getting more noble. I'm getting more tired. And I realize, you know, I don't want to fight God. And I sat quietly, and I'd like to say it took hours for anything to come to my mind. It took minutes. Hey, Chip, you know that trip you took to Phoenix several months ago? Yeah. The one where you followed your son, took him to college? Yeah. Remember how you arranged a big meeting with the pastor of the big church and you did some interviewing? And yeah, great. Well, you remember that the mileage, when you filled out your taxes here just recently, the mileage for that, you accounted as a business trip? I said, well, yeah, I did business there and spent a couple days working with that guy. And yeah. And this isn't an audible voice. This is, how God speaks to you. Would you have gone and met with that pastor at this particular time if your son wasn't going to that particular college? Maybe? I'm just kidding, Lord. No. So you really arranged that time because it's just like finding golf balls, isn't it? You're always trying to get something for nothing. You're always trying to figure a way to, kill three birds with one stone. Two is never good enough for you. So you went there. In fact, didn't you even, put a couple hotel bills as a possible tax deduction? And, well, you're getting really picky now, aren't you, Lord? And I thought, God, if that's the problem, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. And, I just thought, I'd kill two birds with one stone, and I wanted to meet with that guy anyway, and it was a really good meeting, and it really helped me, and it would have been 100%, and it's not like I was reimbursed. I was just saying that it was unreimbursed business expense, and it's a small percentage, and this can't really be that big a deal, is it, Lord? Yeah, it is. It's called stealing. It's what you've been studying. And so I said, I'm sorry. Okay, I repent. I confess. I'll make it right tomorrow morning. Would you speak to me? I need to finish this message. And he did, and the outline came together, and there was peace restored to my soul. And so the CPA there in San Jose does it for a number of Christian organizations, and he did our church and a number of big organizations. And so I called him, and, hey, Dave, how you doing? He's, oh, great, Chip. And, he starts to do the, hey, good to see you. And I said, no, Dave, this isn't like social. I said, this is confession. And I said, have you turned in my taxes yet? And he said, no, the 15th, we sent them all out at one time. I said, well, I've got one kind of deduction, unreimbursed business expense, and it might be a technicality. I'm still trying to fudge a little bit, and I'm not sure if it really counts, but God showed me last night, I don't want it, okay? And I explained to him what I did and why, and the primary purpose of the trip in my heart was this. And he said, you know what? It's interesting. Your conscience is lining up very accurately with IRS protocol and rules. So it is sin, huh? He said, yep, you got it. I said, well, Dave, forgive me for the poor testimony, and I'd like you to mark those off. And he said, by the way, Chip, he said, here's how we calculate it, just for your information. You write that in. If it's not over X amount of dollars, and he went through all this formula. And when he got to the end and showed me how much money I saved, it was like, what is it about the human heart that is so dark? What is it about the human heart that is always trying to get something for nothing? What is it about the human heart that is always trying to fudge? What is it about the human heart? Here, I'm a pastor of a church. And I'm trying to figure somehow, some way to write off a few miles on a trip and a couple, $39 to $59, and you only get a certain small percentage of that. And I sacrifice the peace of God, a full night's sleep, an alienation from my father to try and cut a little corner. Has anyone else ever done that? See, that's what it means to be a kleptomaniac. Klepto is the Greek word for to steal. And what I would like to do with you can see in your handout here, we've given you the meaning of the eighth command. The purpose of the eighth command is this. The purpose is that God wants you to know that he values people and their right to own and possess personal property so highly that he put a divine boundary around what belongs to others. Now, as much as we are warned about materialism, as much as we are warned about not letting our life become revolving around work, when we earn and when we come up with ideas, and when we trust God, and when we step out, and that results in personal property, or personal ideas, or patents, and we have earned them and worked for them, and they become our property. property because we have worked by the grace of God to produce something. God takes a big border or boundary around that property and he says, that belongs to you. And I'm going to tell other people they can't mess with what rightly belongs to you. And I'm going to say to you, you can't mess with what rightly belongs to them. So much so that the eighth command is to act as a flashing light on the dashboard of our conscience saying, don't take it. Don't take it. That's the theme. Don't take it if it doesn't belong to you. Respect others' property. Respect others' ideas. Respect the laws that protect them. Don't steal them. Don't receive them. Don't plagiarize them. Don't defraud them. The idea of stealing, don't take and don't receive anything that rightly belongs to another. And if you're still thinking that I'm the only kleptomaniac in the room, that would mean don't take their money, don't take their product, don't take their copyrights, don't take illegal discounts, don't take another's reputation, don't take their ideas, don't take supplies from work, don't use phone lines that don't belong to you, don't use copy machines that don't belong to you, don't use time that don't belong to you, don't use or take anything without permission that doesn't belong to you. If your employer paid for the pencils, they're his pencils. If he's paying for the phone line, it's his phone line. If he pays you for X amount of hours and you have X amount of time for lunch, the beginning of that time and the end of that time is your time, and the 5 minutes before or the 10 or 15 minutes you come late, you are stealing from your employer. When Bill Gates, who we all know has lots of money, makes little copyrights about software that he created, and you say he's got billions of dollars, and my buddy has it, and I take it, and I put it on my machine because Bill will never know the difference, I'm stealing. When I download music off my computer, that someone else has worked and created a song because I now have the technology to do it and I don't pay the copyrights to the people who made the song who wrote it, I'm stealing. When I take software from our company that works on my company computer, and you know what, it would be so nice, and by the way, I could do some work at home, and I download it on my personal computer and I even do some work at home, I'm stealing. Now, if you want to ask your employer, can I use that? Can I do that? I could do a little bit more work at home. When you take or when you receive anything that belongs to another person, you steal. And your faces are telling me what probably is accurate. I'm mildly relieved but discouraged for you. There's other kleptomaniacs in the room. There is probably not a... You know what? I think we're in a room of thieves. You see, as long as we make stealing people who wear ski masks and break in homes and people that are doing devious things like snatching purses, then we're pretty clean on the eighth command. But when you study scripture, what you find is the heart of the eighth command is not simply about taking. It involves taking, receiving, not just things, but anything that belongs to another person. On the bottom of your notes, it says the roots of kleptomania. Why do we do it? You know, we're going to face it, and I'm going to give you some biblical material about how it works, but why do we do it? I want to give you three reasons. The first one is greed. It's the insatiable desire to get something for nothing. And I will not ask you, because you only have to go about once to get this, but, you know, why in the world have almost everyone in this room at some time driven an hour and a half or 2 hours or 3 hours and heard a very boring 1.5 hour presentation to get something that when we got it, we thought, this is a joke? What was it in you that really thought that you were so special that someone sent you a little envelope, act now, call within the next 3 days, and they were really going to give you $10,000, a new car, or a high-fidelity stereo system. And then when the little person comes out with the little plastic bag, the high-fidelity stereo system, before Japanese used to make good products, remember that? And the little speakers that didn't work, and they hand you this little box, and you're thinking you've been caught at least twice because you got luggage and a radio system. What's behind that? Why do I have to try and figure out how to line up a ministry opportunity when I'm taking my son to college? Why couldn't I say, I love my son. It's a great college. It costs money. Why don't I put gas in the car? Why don't I just accept there's so many miles to get there? Has God provided for my needs? He provides for my needs. What is it about me that's trying to figure out a loophole? It's called greed. And it's in your spiritual veins and it's in mine. The second reason that we steal is laziness. It's the inherent desire to take a shortcut, to cut a corner, to get the product without the process. It started for many of you in elementary school. Remember the PE teacher when they had PE? For some of you? Remember the PE teacher would say, okay, we're going to warm up. Here's the gymnasium. I want everyone to run around the outside of the basketball court. I need to walk down to the office, make sure we do at least 10 laps. And he stands there with the whistle in his mouth, and everyone very carefully runs around. Oh, be very careful with that here. You know, and you go right around the edge, right? And then pretty soon, as he doesn't look, you cut just a little bit of the corner. Then he walks out of the room, right? And he goes down to the principal's office. 3 laps later, we got everyone doing a circle inside of the box. I got news for you people. We got full-blown, born-again, Bible-believing, I love God, I want to raise a Christian family, evangelical Christians doing circles inside the box when it comes to integrity, when it comes to being honest, when it comes to stealing, when it comes to telling the truth. We are lazy. Inherent in the fall, we are lazy. And I'm looking for a shortcut, and you're looking for a shortcut. And I know we have all kind of really nifty words that rationalize it. But I steal because I'm greedy. I steal because I'm lazy. And finally, I steal because of pride. There's an adrenaline-pumping adventure. There's a power that comes to just see if you can pull it off. And now for some of you, you came from really, really good homes, and this never entered your mind, and for you, I'm very thankful. But I decided when I was teaching this the very first time, we had a staff, and it was a church that grew very rapidly, and there was about a core of us. We ended up with about 10 or 12 pastors that we did about a 10-year run, and then we added another 10 or 12 pastors or so after that. And so I went to the guys I knew. I mean, we'd been together for a long time. I said, guys, staff meeting, anybody here ever steal anything? It was like, we're all converted. Yeah. I mean, everybody in the room had stolen. And then I said, what? And this one guy from North Carolina said, I remember when my brother and I did it. We went into this hardware store, and you know, the axe handles, they're full, you know, the big long axe handles. He said, we didn't even know what it was. I said, well, what'd you do? He says, we took the axe handle and we put it down our pants leg and we walked out like this. And I said, well, why did you do that? He said, see if we could. I said, well, what did you do with the axe handle? He said, we didn't know it was an axe handle. We just threw it in the creek. What is it about the thrill of just seeing if you can get away with it? Had another guy who came from a very difficult home and an abusive situation, and he had more stories than I could ever use. He said, but we played a game. My brothers and sisters and I and the people I ran with, we would see the winner of the game was who could get the biggest object out of the mini mart without being caught. Just how big of object could you get out of the mini mart when the guy wasn't watching? I mean, you know, like a pack of gum. I mean, you didn't even get in the running. And I said, well, what did you do with the stuff? He said, we threw it in the dumpster. And you know what? That sounds so crude, and how could anyone do that? But you know something? A lot of stealing occurs sheerly out of the, can I get away with it? In ancient cultures, for example, in Sparta, it was never considered even stealing unless you got caught. In fact, in the country of Sparta, if you stole and you didn't get caught, then you could brag and you were esteemed for how nifty and smart you were in pulling the thing off. The Canaanite gods, the actual gods that they worshiped, stole. They would steal here, and it was applauded. So when this comes into God's people's minds and heart, and he says, don't receive anything, any idea that belongs to someone else. It was a revolutionary concept. Well, you ask yourself, like I do, how do we overcome this? How do we change? How do you overcome being a kleptomaniac? And I understand that, at least I pray, that most everybody listening to my voice is saying, you know what, it's not like I'm taking big stuff. And I know I'm not doing, are you ready for this? I know I'm not doing anything worse than anybody else. Everybody at work does it. Everyone leaves early, but I work really, really hard. And sometimes I do things at home. I'm sure I make up for it. I'm sure it balances. Save it. Save it. If we're going to break this internal pulsating desire to get something for nothing, whether rooted in greed, laziness, or pride, number one, we got to face how we steal. Number two, we've got to break down the defense mechanisms that we have gotten very good at, even as believers. And then number three, we need to follow God's divine prescription. And what I'd like to do in the remainder of our time is, okay, step one, let's face the facts. Then step two, let's, what's God's prescription? Weigh it out. And let's walk out of here as people who in every way say, we're going to be honest. We're not going to steal. So let's face up to the facts. Let me give you about three different ways specifically that we steal. These were drawn right from Scripture. We steal first by seizure. It's called taking. Notice Ephesians 4:28. Let him who steals steal no longer, but rather let him labor with his hands, performing with his own hands what is good, in order that he may have something to share with him who has need. We steal by seizure. We just take stuff. 1.2 million times a year, muggers, robbers, and bandits take by force from fellow Americans, leaving a third of them injured. Less dramatically, employees help themselves to company supplies without permission, auto parts, tools, staplers, postage meters, pens, pencils, notebooks, gasoline, oil, food, and padding expense accounts. We take by seizure. Retailers lose an estimated, and this is a little bit of older statistic now, $10 billion a year in theft, 60% by employees. We take, stealing by seizure. Copyrights with regard to software. How many people have written a term paper and someone else did 90% of the research, and all you need to do is put a little footnote to say who really wrote it, but that little footnote doesn't get on the paper, and you act like you wrote it. It's called stealing. Our common among Christians is what I call long-term borrowing. I wonder, I did this because I knew it was coming up. I wonder how many garden tools in your garage belong to someone else. I wonder if you opened your cupboards, how many punch bowls or serving platters belong to someone else. I imagine if you went through your library meticulously, how many books or how many tapes or how many cassettes or how many CDs would belong to someone else. I imagine if you went through your closet, how many sweatshirts or where we were, wetsuits or ladders or wheelbarrows or pieces of sports equipment are in your house that belong to someone else. But we're born again believers, so what, we just borrowed it. But when you borrow it and it's been 7 years, 3 years, I was so convicted. I went out to my garage and I started inspecting. And then I went to my library and I just started looking through books and thought, I found a set of tapes and had a little note on them. I hadn't even listened to them. And a guy about 3 years ago had loaned me these tapes. I really needed to hear these. Either I needed to say, thank you, I don't want the tapes. And they were real precious. You ever have someone say, now, I want to give these to you. I mean, they mean a lot to me. And if you'll listen to them, and down deep you're thinking, I don't want to listen to those right now. But instead of say to someone, you know, I really appreciate it. I got a stack of stuff I'm listening to. You know, I'll pray, think about it, get back to you. We take it. You know, thinking, I don't want to make the guy feel bad, then it's on my shelf for 3 years. Long-term borrowing, I'm going to suggest, is stealing. It's just stealing. It's not yours. You've seized it. I don't mean it's been willful, malicious, but you seized it. I've seized it.
Chip will be right back. But if you're just joining us, you're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Chip's message, Don't Take It, is from his series, God's Boundaries for Abundant Living. As Chip explained, rather than a harsh bunch of rules, the commandments are actually life-saving instructions from a father who loves his children. God's Boundaries for Abundant Living provides a high view of God that'll give you a new appreciation of your relationship with Him, creating a solid foundation for every aspect of your life. If that's something you'd like to learn more about, we want to help. For a limited time, the CDs for God's Boundaries are discounted, and the MP3s are absolutely free. You'll find God's Boundaries resources on our website, livingontheedge.org, or give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. Well, Chip, I've got to tell you, these messages on the Ten Commandments are rough. Every single one of them is a direct hit.
Well, Dave, I got to agree with you. In fact, you know, I'm glad this one is a little bit funny. And I kept waiting when I taught this originally, you know, like someone said, I was kept waiting for the command that I didn't break, you know. And then when I truly understood it and you unpacked it, well, this is what Jesus really meant. It was like, you know, I'm trapped from all sides. And I would just remind people that was the purpose of these commands. Commands don't save you. Commands don't justify you. Commands don't make you right with God. The whole point of all these commands were to help us see that we fall short, to help us see that we actually do worship other gods, that our heart is precious, and we're to watch over our heart with all diligence, because from it flow the issues of life. And Jesus is the answer. The gospel is the answer. Grace is the answer. But we don't know we need grace until we see this bar of righteousness in this holy God. And I will tell you one thing, he's jealous. I mean, he loves you so much, he's jealous. And in his jealousy, he's created these boundaries so that we would get the highest and the best. And behind these commands and boundaries are this absolute desire that goes back to the very first command: no other gods. None but me. No idols, no graven images, even if you make them in your mind, even if you call them fancy stuff like success or family or kids or work or ministry, no other gods. And our heart's desire is to get to the root cause and help you be delivered from the false gods that you and I worship so that you could live the life that's really life.
Well, thanks, Chip. It's comforting to know I'm not the only one feeling the burn from these messages. But as you said, that's really the purpose of them, to show us where we need work and then to draw us closer to Jesus for the hope and the strength we need to live in peace and freedom. Now, if you're sensing that this is a series you could use as a refresher from time to time, head on over to livingontheedge.org or call us 1-888-333-6003 to order your copy today. You'll find it's temporarily discounted. Well, now here's Chip with a final thought.
I don't know about you, but this whole thing of stealing, it blindsided me. And I got to tell you, I cleaned out my garage, and my friends and my buddies and the people when I taught this, you know, we went and did the same thing. Here's the application for the day. Go start a revolution. Go find the books, the tapes, the CDs, and the junk in your garage that belongs to someone else and return it, and then explain to them what the Eighth Commandment really means. You know what? We'll start a little revolution today. Go for it.
At Living on the Edge, we're happy to let you know about a new way to listen to our extended teaching podcast. Hear Chip anytime on Amazon's Alexa Echo and Echo Dot. Simply say, "Alexa, enable the Chip Ingram podcast." Once Alexa's enabled with that skill, all you need to say is, "Alexa, play the Chip Ingram podcast." You'll hear that day's extended teaching anytime you want. Well, tomorrow on Living on the Edge, Chip continues his series, God's Boundaries for Abundant Living. So be sure to make plans to join us. For Chip and the entire staff, this is Dave Drewy. Thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.